Saturday Night Theater. Action for Slander. The novel by Mary Borden, adapted as a play for radio by the late Felix Felton, with Alan Cuthbertson, William Fox, Carlton Hobbs, and Dennis McCarthy. Action for Slander. The action of Daviot versus Grant and Daviot versus Bradford is being heard by Mr. Justice Trotter. Counsel for the plaintiff, Sir Quinton Jessop's KC.
Members of the jury, in a weekend party in a country house, seven men invited to a shoot by a bachelor host on Friday the 25th of October 1929, just a year ago. On the Saturday night, five of the guests sit down to a game of poker, which is interrupted suddenly when one of the players, Mr. Grant, accuses Major Daviot of cheating. The Major denies the charge, but Captain Bradford, a brother officer, supports it. Major Daviot threatens to take proceedings, but his friends persuade both parties to keep silent. And Major Daviot leaves the house, having promised to take no action against his accusers. Left to himself, Major Daviot would not have hesitated for a moment under this insult. But he was not left to himself. He was not alone in this disastrous game of cards. There were four old and valued friends staying in the house. Two of them had taken part in the game, and three were very prominent in public life. Naturally, they dreaded a public scandal and persuaded Major Daviot to refrain from bringing this action. You understand, I'm sure, the seriousness of the accusation and the importance of your verdict. Major Daviot is not on trial for his life. He is not on trial in this court at all. It is he who is bringing this action for slander. He has come before you to disprove publicly what has been whispered everywhere against him. And if the case in this court of civil justice goes against him, he will be tried by court-martial, cashiered from the army, and disgraced for life. I call Major Daviot.
I swear by Almighty God that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Major Daviot, you're a soldier by profession.
Yes.
And 44 years of age.
Yes.
How long have you been in the army?
25 years.
Did you serve overseas during the war?
Yes.
In France?
In Flanders, mostly at the beginning. Then on the Somme.
Did you see much fighting?
A good deal.
Were you wounded?
Three times, seriously.
What sort of wounds were they?
A bullet through the liver, shrapnel in the stomach, elbow fractured.
How many times were you mentioned in dispatches?
Five.
Were you given the DSO and the MC?
Yes.
Thank you. Are you fond of cards, Major?
Yes.
Play much?
Yes, a good deal.
What card games do you play?
Contract, bridge, and poker, mostly.
What is the most you ever won in an evening at poker?
£1,000, approximately.
Where was this? At your club?
No, at Lord Freshwater's flat in Jermyn Street.
When was that?
About 2 years ago.
Was Lord Freshwater an intimate friend?
Yes.
Do you know if he was in the habit of giving these poker parties in his flat in Jermyn Street?
Well, I've played there before.
For the same sort of stake?
Much the same.
Did anyone ever criticize your play at any of these poker parties?
No.
Has anyone anywhere in any club, private house, or regimental mess suggested that there was anything wrong with the way you played cards?
No, no one.
Now, Major Daviot, about this weekend party. You voted yourself over from Havershot Barracks and arrived at Sir Bernard Roper's house at about 11 o'clock on the Friday night, is that so?
That is so.
The other guests had all arrived?
They had.
A number of distinguished people were there. Let me just run through the list. Apart from your host, Sir Bernard, there was Lord Pontefract, the noted figure of the turf, two ex-cabinet ministers, Mr. William Cubitt and Mr. Charles Cinderford, both now prominent members of His Majesty's opposition. There was your friend, Lord Freshwater, and your brother officer, Captain Bradford, with his wife, Mrs. Josephine Bradford, and Mr. Grant. And does that make up the party you found at Plumpton Mead?
It does.
Did you know everyone when you arrived?
I'd never met Mr. Grant before.
Had you heard of him, or had any dealings with him, in the city, for instance?
None.
But all the other guests were well known to you?
Oh, yes.
Was Mr. Cubitt an old friend?
Yes.
Where you had eaten together?
Yes.
You've kept in touch with each other since your school days?
Yes.
Mr. Cinderford is also a personal friend?
Yes.
If you had felt that either of these gentlemen would suffer in any way through any action of yours, would you have thought twice before taking that action?
I wouldn't have taken it.
How long have you known Lord Pontefract?
I suppose you could say I've known him all my life.
Is it true that you first met your wife at Pontefract Castle?
It is.
And were you married from Lord Pontefract's house in London?
I was.
Was your wife included in Sir Bernard Roper's invitation?
Yes.
But she couldn't accept?
No, she was under doctor's orders and had left for New Zealand.
So you went to Sir Bernard's alone and found all these people assembled. And they were all old and intimate friends, except Mr. Grant. Is that correct?
I would scarcely call Captain Bradford an old friend.
When did he join your regiment?
During the war in 1917.
Then you had soldiered together for about 12 years.
Yes.
You hadn't become old friends in that time.
The more I knew Captain Bradford, the less I liked him.
How was that?
He wasn't the type of man we wanted in the regiment. Had too much money and flung it about.
Is that the only thing you had against him?
Oh, no.
You had other reasons for disliking him.
I had. He was a bully, for one, and unfair, so I thought, to his men.
You were his superior officer, I take it?
Yes, when I became second in command, not before.
What sort of a subordinate was he?
A bad one. He resented interference. He had a nasty temper, very good opinion of himself, and I didn't like his way of handling men or horses.
Did you, as his superior officer, tell him so?
I did, sometimes.
Can you tell us of such an occasion?
The incident, I remember, best had nothing to do with soldiering. It happened in his stable yard. He'd been hunting.
What was it?
I found him beating his horse over the head with the wrong end of his riding crop. The horse had thrown him, and I thought he'd just about killed the animal, so I stopped him.
How?
Got him by the neck and shouted for someone to take the horse.
How did Captain Bradford take your interference?
Not well.
When did this happen?
In 1926.
Did you report the episode to your colonel?
No.
How did you and Captain Bradford get on afterwards?
We rubbed along.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there was a certain amount of friction.
Had you any reason to think Captain Bradford was nursing any special ill feeling against you when you went to Sir Bernard Roper's for the weekend?
No.
Anything unpleasant in his manner?
Nothing more than usual.
You didn't play cards on the night of your arrival, did you?
No, we went to bed early. There was a shoot the next day.
Everything pleasant on Saturday?
Apparently.
Would you call it, on the whole, a pleasant, friendly party that sat down to dinner on that Saturday night?
It seems so.
You dined well. Sir Bernard sets a good table.
Excellent.
And has a good cellar.
I judge so.
Plenty of champagne, port and brandy at dinner.
Plenty.
It is a habit, I understand, in some houses where hospitality is liberal, to go on serving champagne throughout the evening. Was this the custom at Sir Bernard Roper's?
Well, there was champagne going. I don't know if it was customary.
Some preferred other drinks.
Yes. Captain Bradford seemed to prefer beer. Mr. Grant drank whiskey.
A whiskey mixed with soda?
Yes. A good deal of whiskey, not much soda.
What made you notice this?
He twice told the footman not to put so much soda in his glass, and then told him to leave the whiskey bottle and siphon near him.
He drank whiskey pretty continuously during this game of poker.
He did.
How long did the game go on?
For about an hour. We began at about 10:30 and stopped, I think, about 11:30.
What stopped the game?
Mr. Grant jumped to his feet, accused me of cheating, and upset the table.
Was he sober when he did that?
Not entirely.
Were you?
Certainly. I don't drink much when I'm playing poker.
Why?
I like to have my wits about me.
I see. Now, let us go back a moment. When you sat down to this game of poker after dinner, was there any discussion as to who should play?
Yes, there were six of us with Mr. Grant.
Why didn't all six of you play?
Well, you don't play poker with six. Five is the proper number.
Who were the six?
Lord Freshwater, Mr. Cubitt, Mr. Cinderford, Captain Bradford, Mr. Grant, and myself.
How was it settled who should play?
I said I'd as soon play bridge, but Lord Freshwater said no, he'd make up a bridge four in the other room.
What about Mrs. Bradford? What was she going to do?
Mrs. Bradford said she'd watch the poker.
Did she?
Yes.
Where did she sit?
Back from the table on my left, between Captain Bradford and myself.
Could she see your cards and her husband's when you held them?
Well, she could if she leant forward to my side or his to look.
Did you object to her seeing your hand?
Not in the least.
Did she interfere with the game at any time?
No. She was knitting.
I see no cause whatever for levity in the plaintiff's reply. If members of the public have come here in the hopes of a humorous exhibition, they will be asked to leave my court. Pray continue, Sir Quinton.
Certainly, my lord. You used counters for money in this game, I suppose, Major Daviot?
Yes.
Who settled the stakes?
We agreed between us on a £10 rise.
What does that mean?
You can raise any bet by £10, not more.
And you were given each a certain amount in counters before you began to play?
Yes.
How much?
£100 worth.
This £10 rise made the game pretty high, didn't it?
Yes. Cubitt had suggested five. It was Grant who persuaded us to push it up to 10.
Each man's possible loss was limited to £100?
No, no. You can always ask for more counters.
Did anyone do that?
Yes. Mr. Cubitt had an extra 50 twice. And Mr. Grant must have been about 400 down when we stopped playing.
And what about Captain Bradford?
He'd lost a certain amount, but was carrying on with his original lot of counters.
Mr. Grant was the biggest loser, as far as you could see.
That was my impression.
Would you call Mr. Grant a good poker player?
No, I would not.
Yes, if you will allow me, Sir Quinton, I don't know if I'm being a little obtuse, but I would like to know, and perhaps some members of the jury would also, just what happens when a hand of poker is played. What you and I would do, for instance, if we were ever foolish enough to risk our money playing this game.
Perhaps the plaintiff can help us, my lord. Imagine yourself at a card table, Major Daviot, about to begin a game of poker. What do you do?
Well, you cut the deal.
And then?
The man to the left of the dealer antes.
I wonder, Major Daviot, if he would use plain English instead of such strange words as ante. The man to the left antes, but what ante means, I can only guess.
He puts a counter on the table.
Before he's seen his hand?
Yes.
He is required to do this by the rules of the game?
Yes, my lord.
And all the other players do the same?
No, no. They wait till they've looked at their cards. They needn't play if they don't want to.
I see. Go on, please.
The dealer deals five cards to each player. And having seen their cards, the players decide whether they'll come in on the hand and whether they want more cards.
But you're only allowed five cards, aren't you?
Yes, but you can discard any or all of your original five and ask for an equivalent number of new cards.
What did you do with the cards you discard?
You put them face down on the table beside you.
Can you pick them up again and look at them?
Certainly.
But you can't take them back into your hand once you've discarded them.
Certainly not.
That would be cheating.
Obviously.
Now, before Mr. Grant came out with this accusation, had anyone said anything about your play?
They spoke of my being lucky.
Who did? Anyone in particular?
No, I don't think so.
Anyone criticize your play?
No.
So Mr. Grant's accusation came as a complete surprise.
It did.
How much money was there on the table when he interrupted the game?
About £100. I can't be sure. He upset the table.
With all the counters on it?
Yes, they all went on the floor.
Including your winnings?
Yes.
And those of the other players?
Yes, if they had any.
There must have been a considerable amount of confusion in Sir Bernard's library when this occurred.
There was.
What happened in this confusion? What did you do?
I don't remember doing it, but I must have knocked him down.
Knocked who down?
Mr. Grant. I remember someone holding on to me. Mr. Cinderford, I think it was. And Mr. Grant sitting up on the floor holding his chin.
So the counters and Mr. Grant were on the floor, all in a heap together. Mr. Grant presumably picked himself up. Who picked up the counters?
I don't know.
Did you get yours back?
No.
Did anyone try to settle the account of what had been lost and won during the evening?
Only Mr. Covett. He wanted to give me a check for £100, but I wouldn't take it.
So no one paid up?
No.
Have you any idea what you had won during the evening's play?
I should say I was up somewhere between £400 and £500, nearer five.
And you were never paid any of this money won at Sir Bernard Roper's?
No.
Perhaps you remember the cards you were dealt in that last hand of the evening.
I do.
What were they?
The 3 of spades, the 3 of diamonds, the 3, 4, and 5 of clubs.
Are you certain?
Yes.
And what did you do with these 5 cards?
Well, I had 3 threes, or a sequence in clubs of 3, 4, and 5, and 2 other 3s. So I could try for 4 threes, discarding the 4 and 5... Or I could try for a straight or a flush, discarding the 3 of spades and the 3 of diamonds.
You mean a row of cards in numerical sequence?
Yes, my lord.
I see. Go on.
I decided to go for 4 threes, discarded my 4 and 5 of clubs, and was given the 3 of hearts and the queen of hearts.
That gave you 4 threes?
It did.
When you discarded the 4 and 5 of clubs, what did you do with them?
I put them face down on the table beside me.
Did you look at them after you'd been given your 2 new cards?
No.
Did you pick them up again once you discarded them?
No.
And you won the hand with your 4 threes?
Yes.
What about Captain Bradford?
He didn't come in on the hand at all.
What was he doing? Watching?
Well, I suppose so.
Closely?
I shouldn't think so. He helped himself to a drink.
When?
After he'd thrown in his hand.
So he was absent from the table when you discarded 2 cards and asked for 2 more?
Yes.
How long was he away from the table?
A minute or so.
And then he came back with his drink and sat down and watched the play?
Yes.
So now we come to the critical moment. Cast your mind back and tell the jury exactly what happened.
The 4 of us came in for £5. Mr. Cinderford dropped out. Mr. Covett bet £5 on his hand. Mr. Grant raised him 10.
Raise your 10.
Raise your 5.
See you.
See you.
4 threes.
You're cheating.
What?
Damn it. You're a damn card sharper. I saw you fixing your hand.
You swine!
What the devil's going on in here?
Charles, let me go, damn you!
Will someone kindly tell me what is happening in my house?
He's a card sharper, a cheat. I saw him.
Grant, come outside.
That's no good, George. You'll only have to answer a charge of manslaughter.
Charles, if you don't mind your own business.
What I am doing. Now keep quiet a minute and leave this to Jim and me.
Yes, that's it, George. Now be sensible. Charles is right, you know. Gentlemen, Mrs. Bradford, I apologize.
Mr. Grant, do I understand that you've accused Major Daviot of cheating?
Yes, Lord Pontefract, I saw him fix his hand.
Nonsense, Grant, you're drunk.
I'm not drunk. Ring a bell, someone, will you?
I don't think I'd do that, you know.
Not ring, Ponte? Why not?
The servants, I don't think quite the thing.
Perhaps you're right.
Here, give me a hand with this table.
Now then, David, what's all this about?
This man accused me of cheating, and I went for him.
Bad business, this Grant. Very serious matter, you know, an accusation of that sort. Ready to apologize?
I've no intention of apologizing.
What's that?
He cheated, and that's that. I stick to what I said.
Oh, my dear fellow, in my house, you can't, you know. Seriously.
Oh, can't I?
Well, I'm off. You will hear from me on Monday, Grant. Jim, get his solicitor's name for me, will you?
Hold on, George, just a minute.
What for?
Well, my dear fellow, you can't go off like this. It's been a mistake. Very unpleasant for you, I know, but let's get to the bottom of it. Let's sit down and talk it over quietly.
No, thank you.
Better wait, George.
Huh? What do you mean, Bradford? Why had I better wait?
I say so, that's all.
Come now, gentlemen, sit down. Siliford, Cubitt, you are in this game as well as Captain Bradford. There's been a most unfortunate mistake. Let's get at it and clear it up here and now.
Well, that's it. That's right. Sit down. Do, please. You're my guest, remember? Jim, get Daviot to sit down, can't you? There's a good chap.
Mr. Grant, you can't mean this. You simply can't.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Bradford. I'm afraid I
do. But one doesn't, you know. One simply doesn't.
But one does.
Damn you, Grant.
No, Jim, leave him.
It's such a terrible...
Josie, keep out of this. There's a good girl. Go and find Jenny. She's gone up already.
No, I'm not going.
Siliford, did you see anything irregular in George Daviot's play?
No, certainly not.
You, Cubby?
Not only did I see nothing, I'd like to say at once that I consider the whole accusation preposterous.
Siliford, you're the brainy man. You do the talking.
Well, if you wish. Mr. Grant, what exactly do you accuse Major Daviot of doing?
I saw him pick up the cards he discarded, put them back in his hand, and put down two others instead.
Why didn't you say so at once?
I did.
Oh, no, Grant, you didn't. You played the hand out before you said anything.
Huh? Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. I finished the hand first.
Why?
I wanted time to think. I couldn't believe it.
You weren't quite certain, was that it?
I was certain enough. I could have sworn.
Then why didn't you at once? You saw, that is, you say you saw Major Daviot pick up the cards he discarded. He was sitting next to you, on your left. Did he pick them up with his right hand?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes.
You were watching his hand, his right hand, I mean.
I wasn't watching, but I saw it.
It was how far off?
Quite close.
You'd taken cards yourself?
Yes.
How many?
Two. No, three.
Which?
Three.
Are you certain?
Yes.
I'm asking you because, as I remember, you took only one card. How about it, William?
You're quite right. He took one card.
I'm certain I took more than one.
How many?
Two. I mean three.
Well, you're certain you took two or three cards. Maybe two, maybe three. Then you saw Major Daviot put down two cards he already held and pick up the two he'd discarded in the first place. Why didn't you clap your hand down on top of his and show him up then and there?
I don't know. I didn't take in at first what he was doing. I couldn't believe...
You've been drinking a good deal, haven't you?
Not more than any of you.
Oh, come now. We all saw the whiskey bottle, you know.
Well, I wasn't blind, if that's what you mean.
I wonder. Perhaps not. You'd quite a lot of money on the table, as I remember.
Yes, I had. What's that got to do with
it? It might have quite a lot to do with it.
If you mean to suggest...
I don't think, Mr. Grant, that we need press you much further. What have you to say to this, Daviot?
That it's a lie, that's all.
Where are the hands, Siliford? Did anyone keep them?
No, they went on the floor.
Well, how did they get there?
Mr. Grant upset the table.
You upset the table, Mr. Grant?
Yes, by mistake. It was an accident.
Accident or not, it's a pity from your point of view, Mr. Grant.
I can see that.
There being no way of sorting out the cards or reconstructing the hands, it comes down to your word against Major Daviot's. Are you quite certain you didn't make a mistake and don't wish to apologize?
It's not quite as simple as that.
Do I understand, Bradford, that you too accused Daviot of cheating?
Yes, I do. I saw him take back the cards he discarded, put down other cards he was holding, and rearrange his hand. And I saw him do this not only during the last hand, but twice before as well.
Brad, How dare you?
Josie, you be quiet.
I'm going. I won't listen.
Stay where you are.
I won't. Brad, you're hurting my arm. Let me go.
Let her go, Bradford, before you break her wrist. Get out.
Oh, God. What's going to happen?
Now, George, it doesn't matter what he says. No one's going to believe him.
I'm sorry, Sir Bernard, but it's quite impossible for me to stay in your house any longer. I'll go and get Tandy to pack my bags. I'll see my solicitors on Monday.
Well, you all saw his eyes. You can see for yourself he's as guilty as hell.
You're wrong, Bradford. We know George.
Know him, do you? So do I.
What do you mean by that, Captain Bradford?
What I say.
Now, look here, sir. If you've any imputations to make against Major Daviot's character, make them now. Out with them.
Well, I know for one thing that he's in a tight place for money.
What do you mean by that?
Simply what everyone in the regiment knows. That he lives at the rate of 3,000 a year and has managed it till now, thanks to his wife's income and his habit of always winning at cards.
I cannot see that Mrs. Daviot's income or what she chooses to do with it is any business of yours, Captain Bradford.
Perhaps not. The fact that George can't count on it any longer seems to me to be a possible explanation.
What the devil do you mean, sir?
Simply that as she's gone...
Gone? Where?
I don't know. New Zealand, I think.
You mean that George's wife has left him?
I mean just that.
I don't believe it. My wife saw her 3 days ago. Freshwater,
mm-hmm.
Any truth in this? You're his friend. You ought to know.
Oh, pack of lies. Anne's only gone for a visit.
She was to have sailed this morning from Tilbury.
Good God.
And George has a great many accounts overdue at Havershop.
It's a pack of lies, I tell you. A pack of lies.
Now, look here, Jim. Just leave this to me, do you mind? I don't think these two gentlemen quite understand what they're letting themselves in for. And I don't want George to leave until I've seen him. I think Mr. Grant and Captain Bradford may have cause to regret it if he does. Don't you agree, Pontifex?
Most certainly I do.
Rapon?
Cinderford's right. This affair must go no further, Grant. Do you hear? You must drop it, you understand?
That's all very well, but what about Daviot? And even if I were ready to take back what I said, I don't suppose Bradford will.
Captain Bradford must be reasonable, too. You must see, Bradford. This whole business is impossible, quite impossible. With two brother officers in the same regiment? Why, think
about it. Now, just a minute, Ponte. Be a good chap, Freshwater, and try and stop George going.
All right.
Now, Captain Bradford, I'd like to say that if Major Daviot feels obliged to bring this to court, I shall advise him to be perfectly honest about his financial position and to state frankly what I know to be the truth.
Which is?
That he's played cards for money all his life, is a born gambler, and has been in some pretty tight places more than once.
You'd advise him to tell that to a jury?
I would.
Sound well, do you think?
It would sound exactly as it should sound, like a statement of fact. Now, you say you saw him cheat on three separate occasions. Would you care to tell us more specifically when they were?
Don't think I would.
Perhaps you're wise. But you'll have to give all the details in court. How will you prove it, Captain Bradford? That's what interests me. And why didn't you interrupt the game before? Care to give us your reasons for that?
No, I wouldn't.
And you're going to stick to this, even though Cubitt and I are going to swear that you're either mistaken or deliberately lying. Am I right, William?
Quite right.
You see my point, Captain Bradford. I'm prepared to believe that you've made a mistake because I can't believe that you bring such a charge deliberately against any man, even if you hated him. You don't hate Daviot, by the way, do you?
No. Why should I?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure. I was just wondering. Because, you see, if you did, your position would be even more unpleasant than it is.
Very clever, aren't you? Well, it's no use. I've no reason to want to injure Daviot. I've known him for years. Besides, he's my superior officer. Nasty business, accusing a man in your own regiment of cheating at cards. You think I don't see that, just as well as he does? What makes you so certain he'll ask me to say so in a public court?
Because I agree with him that he's got to.
You'll advise him to sue us?
I shall.
Do you want this business to be aired in public?
Certainly not. But it'll have to be all the same.
All right. You win. I'll keep quiet if he does.
Packed everything, Tandy?
Yes, Major.
Where are my golf clubs?
In the front hall, sir.
Guns?
I've got them in my room, sir.
Right. Well, collect everything and then wait for me outside in the car.
Yes, sir. Oh, good evening, my lord. Here's Lord Freshwater, sir.
Oh, come in, Jim. All right, Tandy.
Thank you, sir.
George, Charles wants to have a word with you before you go. You won't consider staying on, I suppose, until morning?
No, Jim. Charles can see me any time. I'll be in London on Monday. What does he want?
I don't quite know, but he's very insistent. Old Barney's in the most awful fuss, and so's Ponty. What about you, old chap? And this mess? Can't you get it into your head that we're all with you in this thing? Now, come on down.
What's it got to do with Barney and Ponty?
Well, it's Barney's house, and old Ponty does know a thing or two about the world.
Oh, the world's in it now.
Oh, now, look, George.
All right. Charles wants to see me. He can come up. I don't want to run into Bradford and Grant.
Well, I'll tell him. Now, don't forget, George, we are your friends.
Tandy? Tandy? Oh. No, of course, he's downstairs. I wonder if he's remembered. Who's that?
George, you're alone.
Juicy. Come in, quickly. No, leave the door. Then we'll hear people.
Oh, I had to come, George.
Oh, my love. My precious love.
Where can we meet? I must see you on Monday. How can I get hold of you? Quick, tell me.
Get your things together. We haven't much time.
What?
Here, wipe your upper lip.
George, where can I find you on Monday?
You're not coming with me?
Tonight, after all this.
Why not?
Oh, be sensible, George. No time to argue. We'll talk on Monday. Kiss me.
Oh, I'll be in town. Meet me at the club, 1:30.
No, not the club. Someone might see us.
That hotel, then?
No, that's worse.
William and Jim, they're coming up.
What should I do?
Go into the dressing room. Wait till they've come in, then slip out by the other door.
George, Monday, where?
You say.
That tea shop at Marble Arch, downstairs, 1:30.
Get in there, quick.
Don't forget, George.
George, do come down, old chap. The coast is clear.
Yes, we've got Bradford and Grant out of the way. Come on. Just a word with Ponty and a drink before you go.
Oh, well, if you insist. But I'm leaving tonight. My car's waiting outside.
All right, if that's how you feel. But we can't have you rushing off without even saying goodbye. We're all in this with you.
All right, then. Let's go down and get it over. Well, I gather you wanted to see me, Ponty.
Yes, George. You see, we don't think you quite realize... we're all anxious to help you do the right thing after careful consideration. A false move now... Must think, you know, my boy. Look carefully.
Yes?
Then there's another thing. I don't want to seem to pry into your private affairs, but if it's true your wife has left you, it won't...
I don't see why Anne need to be brought into this.
Well, she's your wife, George. If you take this matter to court and it comes out, it might look as if her leaving you had something to do with your gambling.
I see. My wife's going away. Oh, damn me. Is that it?
Why, don't put it as strongly as that. But it won't help your case, I'm afraid. When did she go, by the way?
Really, Ponty.
Anne sailed this morning from Tilbury, since it interests you.
Well, there you are. It couldn't be worse.
George, I say, I know what to do. Get her back. That's the thing. The boat's sure to stop at Cherbourg or somewhere. Now send her a wire. Tell her you're in a jam. Anne's a good sort. She'll come like a shot. Can we use the phone, Barney?
Well, certainly.
No, thank you. Huh? And we won't discuss my wife any more, if you please.
Very well, George. We'll leave your wife out of it. And I'll only say this. That I would have advised you to go to your colonel and ask for an inquiry if... But... Well... I doubt if he or the War Office would take a very favorable view.
You mean you think they wouldn't believe me? Is that it?
Well, how could they? Here are two men who say they saw you cheat. Not one, but two. And one of them is a brother officer with no reason on earth to want to injure you, as he told us just now.
So you've talked it over with Bradford?
Oh, certainly. Well, that is to say, Cinderford did the talking. And very well, too. He made Bradford see how very unfortunate it would be for him if you took proceedings.
I thought you were saying it would be very unfortunate for me.
Well, just my point. Disastrous for both sides. Wasn't that our conclusion? You bear me out, Roper, don't you?
Oh, indeed I do. No doubt about it. A case like this would leave a very nasty smell. Damn it. Think of what the newspapers would do. Two ex-cabinet ministers and two officers of a crack regiment all playing for stakes like that. You can't muzzle the press, you know. We'd all be in it, even the ladies.
Oh, yes, by Jove, I hadn't thought of that.
What do you say, Covet?
George, I'm not thinking of myself. I'm thinking of you, and I beg you not to bring an action for your own sake. Bradford and Grant are prepared to drop it. They've given us their word.
What have you got to say, Charles?
I can't advise you to bring an action, old man, because I don't feel at all certain that you'd win your case.
Why not?
I don't see how you could prove that Bradford had any reason to lie, and I don't see how you could prove that you hadn't cheated.
Let me get this straight. You've discussed this with Bradford and Grant. They've agreed to keep quiet if I do. And you all advise me to do nothing. Is that it? I see. Very well. You can have it your own way.
George, I've been waiting over an hour for you. I even had to ring your club. What happened?
Nothing. I thought it was off.
What do you mean? It's the last thing we arranged, 1:30 here.
I know, but everything changed after that. They persuaded me to let Bradford off.
What difference does that make to you and me?
Don't you see, Mother?
I do not. I can't make you out, George. I thought you let Brad off for my sake.
That came into it.
What do you mean, came into it?
I mean, I saw I couldn't bring you into it.
Well, that's what I thought you meant. So, well, what's the trouble?
I saw I couldn't show Bradford up as a cad who'd done this because he was jealous of me and his wife. So I realized it was hopeless.
I was simply an obstacle. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No, my dear, no.
I was a nuisance. It was my fault that you had to lie down under this and let two men call you a cheat.
Josie, please.
Well, isn't it true? When I came to your room, you wanted me to go off with you. When you thought things over, you changed your mind. Well, did you or didn't you?
Yes, Josie, I did. I thought the best thing to do was to ignore the whole business, and that being so, you and I...
That's what Brad said, but I didn't believe him.
What did he say exactly?
That you'd struck a bargain with him. Have you nothing to say to that, George?
Nothing.
It's true?
True enough.
And I nearly went off with you on Saturday night. Did you want me or not?
Yes, my dear, I did.
But you don't know. Is that it?
Certainly, if you care to.
How dare you? You were madly in love with me on Saturday. Now you insult me. What's happened? You scared? Is that it?
Josie, stop. Be sensible.
Oh, what a fool I've been. Goodbye, Major Daviot. It's a pleasure to have known you. Perhaps you did cheat at that game after all.
Hello, Evershot Barracks.
Black's Club here. Mr. Covett would like to speak to Colonel Standish. He's a personal friend of Major Daviot. You're through, Mr. Covett.
Thank you, Benson. Hello.
Hello, Colonel Standish, yeah?
Oh, Colonel, I'm sorry to bother you. I wanted to inquire about my friend, Major Daviot.
Yes?
We haven't heard of him for some time. He hasn't been answering my letters. We wondered if he was ill or anything.
No, he's on leave. He got 3 months' leave just before Christmas.
Have you any idea where he is?
Well, he's gone to his place in the West Country.
Ah, yes. Is his wife with him?
No, his wife is wintering in New Zealand.
Ah, yes, I see. Oh, thank you, Colonel.
Not at all.
Benson.
Sir?
If they come through from the house, Mr. Cinderford and I will be in the smoking room.
Very good, sir. Well, any news?
Yes, but I don't know what to make of it. Daviot went on leave before Christmas. And he's down at that place of his in the West Country.
On his own?
Apparently, and seems to be still in New Zealand.
That's odd. The place is practically derelict. I thought it was Anne who liked it. Well, who's looking after him?
I don't know. Gardener's wife, I suppose.
Oh, well, he's got a sulk. Let him.
If only the fellow would get his wife back.
Should we write to her?
Oh, no. Can't do that. Remember how he shut Jim up that night when he suggested sending her a wire?
Oh, yes.
You seen any of the others?
Yes, the other night. A whole bunch of them at supper. Josie sailed in with 5 men round her. Grant was there, very much in favor, it seemed. So whatever happened, she's not crying her heart out.
Women.
I asked the head waiter about George. Said he hadn't seen him the whole winter.
What is he playing at?
Oh, well, we've plenty to worry about besides George. Wall Street in a shambles, blizzards all over Europe, and a Labour government messing things up at home.
I say, Charles, have you heard all this about George coming into this club and walking out again?
Yes, I have indeed. You know, Grant's been made a member.
Ah, so that's it.
Yeah. George walked slap into him, cut him stone dead, and went and raised hell with the club secretary.
Yes, but...
What did the club think it was doing letting in riffraff like that? Secretary's livid with him. Doesn't know where he's gone and cares less.
I've just had a call put through to his barracks. They're bound to know. Well, you know my wife. She insisted.
Oh, Sally, how does she come into it?
Charles, you don't realize. The story's all over town.
What about that game of poker?
Oh, yes.
Well, I've heard nothing.
Well, neither had I. But the other day, Sally went to one of those awful tea parties they have, and all the women were buzzing with it. Must have come out too juicy, I suppose.
Well, what did Sally do?
Well, I told him it was all a pair of lies, and then came home and took it out on me. And she says we've got to find George, ask him down for the weekend, and confront people with him.
Major Davitt's address, sir.
Thank you, Benson.
Thank you, sir.
Good God.
Why, what's the matter?
Well, where do you think he is? The Balmoral Private Hotel, Bayswater.
What the devil's he doing there?
I don't know. Well, let's go and find out, eh?
What, now?
Oh, yes. Let's face it, we've been letting things slide just because the whole thing's awkward and we wish it had never happened.
All right, then. Let's see what we can do.
Who's there?
Is that you, George? It's William and Charles.
Just a moment. So you've ferreted me out, have you? All right, come in. Ever seen a Bayswater bedsitter? Charming, isn't it? What about a scotch?
No, thanks.
What on earth are you doing here, George?
Minding my own business. No, that's Percival in the cage. He's a talkative chap. Sings when he feels like it. I don't know what you've got to be so damn cheerful about. Shut up! Ah, yes, and look, I've gone in for stamp collecting. It's better than poker, don't you think? No unpleasantness, no talk about cheating.
Yeah, but what about your surgering? You're still on leave?
Oh, that's all right. I drive down to Habershot every day. You think I'm going to go on living next door to that swine Bradford? I thought he'd have the decency to get transferred somewhere. Not him. All right, if he wants a fight, he can have it. I'll get him out before I've done.
George, I have a message from Sally. She's very upset at not having seen you. She says you must come down for the weekend, and she won't take no for an answer.
Well, please thank her very much, but I am not accepting any invitations.
Oh, George, pull yourself together. You'd better know the story's out.
Oh. So they've not kept their word, eh?
I don't think it was them. The women have got it. Josie was there, don't forget.
I see. Well, this is the way you wanted it. Now you've got it. Thanks for your good advice.
George, most sincerely, we're sorry that we advised you as we did. We were wrong. At the time, we thought that it was in your best interest.
No, William. I think you advised me in your own interest, both of you. And they're the same today, aren't they? The only difference now is with me. And all I want is to be left strictly alone. I'm sure the house is witty.
But, George, don't you realize what people are saying?
Can't you understand that I don't wish to be disturbed?
George, please.
Are you fellows trying to hand me out of London or what? Get out, both of you! Get out! Who's that? Well, who the hell is it? William? William, if it's you and Charles again, I told you last time and the time before, I don't want to see you.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Now, look here.
Anne.
May I come in?
What are you doing here? How did you find me? What made you?
I am your wife, George.
But you'd gone.
Well, I've come back. Sally Cubitt sent me a cable.
Why?
It said you were in trouble and needed me. And so I came straight back.
That's no good, Anne. It's too late. You don't understand.
I understand perfectly. Sally met me and told me the whole story. It seems that not only your friends, but I, too, have let you down.
You?
Well, my leaving you looked pretty bad, George.
So you've come back to stand by me. And afterwards?
Let's leave the future until we've won, George.
Won what?
An action for slander against Bradford.
I couldn't win without bringing his wife into it.
You still care for her enough to want to spare her?
Oh, no. But I care for the regiment. If I explain why Bradford hated me enough to want to ruin me...
Very well. We'll forget Josie and win the case without her.
I promised Jim, Charles, and William I would do nothing.
Have they kept their promise?
No.
Then you owe them nothing. What's this letter? You haven't opened it.
Oh, I don't know. I prefer not to open the sort of letter I get these days.
May I?
Certainly.
It's from Black's Club. It's... George, listen. It's from Bill Cubitt.
What does he want this time?
Well, listen. My dear George, I am writing to tell you that the story of our poker game is now all over the place and that the committee of this club is meeting to consider the question of your membership.
What?
I have discussed this with Cinderford and we want to assure you of our support if you decide to take action in this matter. Please call on us if we can be of any assistance. Yours affectionately, William. Now, what about it, George? Are you going to lie down under this?
No. They've forced my hand.
Now, the first thing to do is to get you out of this place.
You want me to go back to Habershot and live next door to Bradford?
No. Huh? We'll take a furnished house in London. A gay little house in the middle of Mayfair.
Oh, but Anne, the expense.
Oh, to hell with the expense. I'll go to the house agent tomorrow. What about your colonel, by the way?
Standish. Oh, he hates the whole thing.
And whose side is he on?
I think mine.
Oh, then he'll give evidence for you.
I'd rather leave him out of it.
No, George. No one but Josie is going to be left out of it. Jim, Charles, William must all go into the witness box. And if they don't like it, well, it's just too bad.
I shan't call them.
But, George...
You always did rush your fences, Anne.
Well, I cleared them, didn't I?
Right. What do we do about a solicitor?
Ah, Sally's seen to that. She's putting me in touch with some people called Smithers and Company. Very old-fashioned, very respectable, just what we need.
You keep saying we, Anne.
Well, we are in this together, George. I'll see Smithers tomorrow.
So far, so good, Mrs. Davitt. If Colonel Standish is willing to speak out as strongly as that on our client's behalf, it's excellent. But what about all those friends of his, Mr. Cubitt, Cinderford, Lord Pontefract?
He doesn't mean to ask them to defend him.
But that's madness. Colonel Standish wasn't even there. He can only give him a good character as a soldier. Cubitt and Cinderford took part in the actual game.
I know. But he won't do it. He says he's going to tell the jury they gave him bad advice, that he knew it was bad when he took it, and that he isn't going to ask them to help him now.
Doesn't he realize he needs all the help he can get?
I'm afraid he doesn't.
What does he think's going to happen when the other side gets at him? Bradford's got Sir Eustace Cunningham, you know. Very formidable in cross-examination. Has he considered that?
I think his idea is to tell the truth. And I think he expects to be believed.
Well, we've done our best, Mrs. Davitt. We're briefing Sir Quinton Jessops. But if your husband is going to behave like this, it wouldn't surprise me if Sir Quintin threw up the case altogether.
Major Davitt, this is insanity.
What do you think a court is? What do you think a judge is? A fool? A child? These men were present at the time and parties to the quarrel. If you don't call them, we might as well make a public confession of guilt and abandon the action.
Why should I ask my friends to help me win my case? That's your job, Sir Quentin.
I see. And how, pray, am I to do it?
By dragging the truth out of these two skunks.
And you? You're going to tell the truth?
Of course.
The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. What about your friendship with Mrs. Bradford? What are you going to say about that?
Nothing.
And what about Captain Bradford?
Oh, I've plenty to say about him.
You want me to go into court and rake up this story about his beating a horse?
I want you to go into court, Sir Quentin, and show Bradford up for what he is. But that's not the point.
Oh, what is the point?
The point is that I did not cheat.
And how do we prove it?
By the cards.
What cards? They all went on the floor. They can't be picked up now.
Can't they?
What do you mean by that?
Sir Quentin, I have card sense, a particular kind of memory. I could pick up those cards and sort them out now.
From a year ago?
Certainly.
Hasn't Bradford card sense, too?
Not in this case.
Why?
Because he's lying, inventing things that never happened. If you keep at him over that hand, he's bound to get muddled sooner or later. Don't you see?
You may have a point there. Very well, it might just come off. But if I do that, you must let me have these witnesses. I'm not going in there to make a fool of myself. I want Cinderford, Cubitt, Lord Freshwater...
Not Freshwater. You can have anyone else.
What about Mrs. Bradford?
No.
The other side may call her.
Let them.
Well. Now, be very careful when I'm examining you in court. What did Mr. Grant say, Major Davitt? His exact words, if you please.
He said, "You're cheating. You're a damn card sharper. I saw you fixing your hand."
Had you cheated, Major Davitt?
I had not.
Is there any truth in the accusation against you?
None.
Do you swear on your oath that you did not cheat?
I do.
Thank you, Major Davitt.
Yes, Sir Eustace?
Hello? Major Davitt, we have been told that you decided to ignore this charge of cheating for the sake of your friends who advised you to take no action. Is that right?
It is.
So you ignored the insult and left the house, it being then sometime after midnight on the Saturday in question?
Yes.
Did anyone leave the house with you on that Saturday night?
No one but my servant.
All Sir Bernard Roper's guests stayed on after you'd left?
Presumably.
Did Lord Freshwater cut his visit short?
Not that I know of.
But he didn't leave with you?
No.
You'd been asked as his friend?
Yes, I suppose so.
You were a very great friend of his, weren't you?
Yes.
Would it be correct to say that until this unfortunate event, you considered him your greatest friend?
It would.
How was it then, Major Davitt, that your greatest friend didn't leave the house with you when two guests staying under the same roof accused you of the crime of stealing their money under cover of a friendly game of cards?
It might be as well to ask him.
Thank you. I intend to do so. Just now I'm asking you, and I think you know the answer quite well. I suggest to you that Lord Freshwater didn't go with you because his affection and respect for you had received a shock. Because, to put it bluntly, he believed you guilty. I suggest further that not one person in all that distinguished and pleasant gathering believed in your innocence. They were all friends, weren't they? With the exception of Mr. Grant.
I didn't consider Captain Bradford a friend.
Oh, yes. You told us just now about a supposed grudge Captain Bradford has against you. I shall come back to that in a moment. But you didn't object to playing poker with him for pretty high stakes, did you?
No, I couldn't very well.
Oh, please confine yourself to answering my questions, Major Davitt. You counted him friend enough for that, didn't you? Otherwise, one imagines you wouldn't have joined the game. It was a friendly game, wasn't it?
Certainly.
You'd call it a very innocent game, wouldn't you?
Yes,
No harm in it.
None.
Nothing disgraceful in five men of the world playing such a game?
No, certainly not.
Even if two of them were officers in the army?
No.
Or ex-cabinet ministers? No great harm in a member of parliament playing this sort of poker, was there?
I didn't think so at the time.
You didn't think so at the time. Now, Major Daviot, I think you told us that you'd known Lord Pontefract all your life.
That is so.
And that you used to stay at Pontefract Castle in the old days.
I did.
How long is it now since you've stayed at Pontefract Castle?
Something over a year.
Didn't you and your wife expect to spend last Christmas there?
No, my wife was wintering in New Zealand.
But you didn't winter in New Zealand, Major Daviot, did you?
No.
Isn't it a fact that you'd been in the habit of attending a Christmas shoot at Pontefract each year?
I'd been there for Christmas several years running.
You didn't go there last Christmas, did you?
No.
Why not?
I went somewhere else.
I suggest to you that Lord Pontefract put you off. That you alone were put off. And that you were put off because Lord Pontefract didn't wish to continue this old friendship. Am I right in thinking that you've always counted on Mr. Cubitt, too, as a lifelong friend?
I have.
Seen much of him lately?
I haven't kept up with him, if that's what you mean.
That, Major Daviot, is just what I mean. What about Mr. Cinderford? He, too, was an old friend. Have you kept up with him since that lamentable weekend?
I haven't seen much of him.
How many times during the past year?
I don't know exactly.
It was on Mr. Cinderford's advice, wasn't it, that you decided over a year ago to take no action against Mr. Grant and Captain Bradford?
On his and others.
Did you accept this advice readily?
No.
You thought they gave you bad advice?
I knew it was bad.
You tell me that you decided to do something you thought foolish simply because your friends asked you to?
Yes.
I put it to you that Mr. Cinderford told you you couldn't win this case, and that he said this because he knew you'd cheated.
I was not guilty, and Mr. Cinderford knew it.
For a whole year, you have been willing to let this accusation stand against you, simply because your friends advised you, as you thought very foolishly, to do nothing.
I took action 3 months ago.
Oh, so you did. Thank you for correcting me. Yes, you made up your mind nearly 9 months after you'd been accused of cheating to take action against Mr. Grant and Captain Bradford. What made you do this after such a long interval?
I realized that people were talking.
About your having cheated at cards?
About my being supposed to have cheated at cards.
When was it that you first suspected people were talking? Now, please give me a careful answer.
I suppose I began to imagine so when I came back from leave at the end of February, but I didn't know anything definite.
Are you sure you didn't suspect something before that?
Why, I may have imagined something.
Didn't you begin to avoid people you were in the habit of seeing, as well as your old friends, even before you went on leave?
No.
Didn't you keep to yourself because you were afraid people who'd heard how you'd cheated at cards wouldn't want to see you?
No.
Did you go to your club as usual?
I did for a time.
Didn't you notice soon after Christmas that men with whom you'd been used to playing cards no longer wanted to play with you?
I thought I noticed a difference, but I wasn't certain.
You've been in Black's club since last March?
No.
Or to the Pall Mall?
I don't think so.
Aren't you certain?
I can't remember.
I put it to you that you hadn't set foot in either of these pubs since last March because you were afraid if you went there, you'd be cut by your old friend.
That is not so.
I put it to you that your friends advised you to take no action in your best interests as a man who was guilty, and that you accepted this advice and were willing to live on all these months, knowing that you were dishonored, knowing that you were avoided by decent men who had once respected you because you had cheated that night and were afraid to take any action against your accusers.
I did not cheat. I am innocent.
Now, about this poker game, Major Daviot. The stakes were pretty high. I've no doubt the jury will think them very high indeed. But as far as you knew, the four gentlemen you played with could afford to lose several hundred pounds in an evening just as well as you could. Is that so?
As far as I know, yes.
Could you afford it, Major Davis?
I didn't lose. I won.
I'm aware of that. But suppose you'd been 500 pounds or whatever it was down instead of up. Would you have been able to draw a check on your bank for that amount?
I wouldn't have lost so much in any circumstances.
It's a question of luck, isn't it, in a fair game? I'm talking, remember, of fair play. If you play fairly and the luck is against you, how can you avoid losing?
You can't, but you can limit your losses.
I see. So when you sat down to a game of poker, you were prepared, even in a fair and friendly game, to lose only a certain minimum sum, but ready to win any amount.
You can put it that way. I didn't tell the other man when to stop, if that's what you mean.
You suggest that I'm putting it unfairly?
No. Only unpleasantly.
Gambling and cheating at cards are not pleasant subjects, Major Daviot. Allow me, nevertheless, to keep you to the point. To what lengths would you have gone to avoid losing £500 on that Saturday night?
I don't understand the question.
I will be more explicit. Suppose your luck had been out in this game, and you'd been £500 down at 11:30. Would you have cheated in order to recoup yourself?
Certainly not.
1929 was a bad year for you, wasn't it, as far as gambling went?
Not as I remember.
You don't recall noticing any difference in your income from cards?
I had no income from cards.
Please don't beat about the bush, Major Daviot. Weren't you hard-pressed for money when you let your house at Havershot and moved into those lodgings in Bayswater?
No.
Why did you take these very modest apartments?
I was alone. My wife was away.
You didn't live in these lodgings in order to economize?
Yes, that was one of my reasons.
And the other reason was fear of taking up life again at Havershot?
No.
Then what other reason had you, beyond the urgent need to economize, for choosing to live during the spring and early summer in a street in Bayswater, 60-odd miles away from your regiment, and a long way, as London goes, from your clubs?
I'm afraid I don't understand.
You were not, you say, in serious financial difficulties at the time?
No.
Think carefully, Major Daviot. Cast your mind back and try to remember. You had no debts outstanding at that time?
Not more than usual.
Ah, you were usually in debt.
Yes, to a certain extent.
You were usually in debt and were in the habit of making money out of cards to pay your debt. Is that a fair way of putting it?
I was not in the habit of making money out of cards.
Didn't you owe a great deal of money to tradesmen, tailors, and so on?
I hadn't paid my tailor for some time.
Your tailor is like most tailors, I suppose, who serve the officers of crack regiments. A patient man. But what about the butchers and bakers of Havershot? Didn't you leave your house without paying their accounts?
I may have left some accounts outstanding.
You consider this sort of thing proper behavior on the part of an officer in the army?
They've all been paid now.
I think, Sir Eustace, we have got your point. And I think that we might get on to something more definitely connected with the accusation.
I was establishing a motive, my lord. I wish to make it clear that Major Daviot badly needed this £500.
Quite. I see your point perfectly, and the jury no doubt do the same. The plaintiff was in debt. It took him some months to pay his debts. He says he has paid them. Let's leave it at that for the moment and turn our attention to this game of cards.
I'm coming to it, my lord. I'm coming to it. Now, you told us, Major Daviot, that in the hand in question, you were dealt a sequence in clubs. The 3, 4, and 5... and 2 other 3s. You told us that having decided to try for 4 3s, you discarded the 4 and 5 of clubs, asked for 2 cards, and were given the 3 of hearts and the 3 of hearts. Is that correct, according to your statement?
Quite correct.
I put it to you that that is not what in fact occurred. I put it to you that you did not try for 4 3s, but for a flush in clubs. that you discarded the three of spades and the three of diamonds, asked for two cards, and were given the three of hearts and the queen of hearts, saw immediately that if you'd kept the two threes, you would have had four threes. Promptly decided to rectify your mistake, picked up the two cards you discarded.
That is complete and utter
nonsense. Put down in their place the four and five of clubs you decided to keep. That, I put it to you, Major Daviot, is what actually happened. And that is the explanation of what Mr. Grant and Captain Bradford saw you do. I now ask you the question. Do you deny that you cheated in the way I have just described?
I did not cheat in that or any other way.
You didn't do this in this hand or on two other occasions?
I have never, on that Saturday night or any other time, done anything of the kind.
You deny that you cheated in this way, though two men swear that they saw you do it?
I deny it absolutely.
Oh, so would most men, Major Daviot, in your place. And since you do deny it, I must ask you what explanation you have to offer as to how these two gentlemen could think they saw you do this.
Mr. Grant was angry, and he was drunk. He may have thought he'd seen something. Captain Bradford thought nothing of the kind. He lied.
You accuse Captain Bradford of lying deliberately and with malice?
I do.
You accuse this brother officer of bringing this charge against you deliberately, falsely, and in order to ruin you?
Yes. Captain Bradford knew I had not cheated in any way at any time when he accused me.
You make a very definite distinction, then, between your countercharges against the two defendants.
Oh, yes.
What sort of reputation has Captain Bradford in the regiment? Was he generally liked and respected?
I suppose some liked him.
What was his war record?
As good as most.
He joined your regiment during the war, didn't he?
He did.
And received a permanent commission afterwards.
Yes.
And didn't he, after this, have the honor of the regiment at heart quite as much as you had?
I'm afraid not.
You say that because he brought this charge against you, his superior officer. Come, Major Davier, please answer the question. Have you any reason for saying Captain Bradford thought less of the regiment than yourself, other than that he exposed you, a brother officer, as a cheat?
He has not exposed me. He's done something quite different. He's attempted to ruin me, though he knows I am innocent, and has sacrificed the good name of the regiment for a private spite.
You tell me seriously that Captain Bradford chose to involve his regiment in a scandal so that he could get even with you for some private injury?
I do.
And you suggest that that feeling of injury was due to some slight friction between you?
I don't say it was slight.
You got on well enough, didn't you, to stay with him in the same house for the weekend?
I don't think either of us was very keen on it.
Will you admit that Captain Bradford knew what a serious thing it would be for the regiment, were its second in command, to be accused of cheating at cards?
Oh, yes, he knew that.
Will you admit that he would naturally be reluctant to bring such a charge against a brother officer?
No. I think he was delighted to have the chance to bring it.
What? You say Captain Bradford was delighted to catch you cheating?
That is not what I said. I said he was delighted to have the chance of accusing me of cheating.
What gave him his chance if you didn't cheat?
Mr. Grant.
You mean to tell me that Captain Bradford was waiting for a chance to ruin you when you met at Sir Bernard Roper?
That is what I believe.
Have you any reason to make such an extraordinary statement?
I have.
You had reason to think at this time that Captain Bradford wanted to injure you.
I had.
What reason?
Oh, we'd never got on. He was a bad subordinate. He resented interference. There had been one incident in particular when he showed his temper.
Are you referring to the incident you told us about over a horse?
I am.
You would have us believe that Captain Bradford in October 1929 set out to ruin your reputation and get you dismissed from the army because you reprimanded him for beating a vicious horse over the head in 1926?
I would have you believe the truth, that he lied deliberately, knowing I had not cheated.
Major Daviot, is this all you can offer by way of explanation of your fantastic theory? Come, Major Daviot, answer me, if you please. You have said that Captain Bradford had been nursing a grievance against you over this incident since 1926, and that he'd been awaiting his chance to ruin you. Have you nothing better to offer by way of a theory than this?
No. That is my explanation. I have no other.
Ah, Mrs. Davies. Good evening.
Good evening. Do you want George, Mr. Cinderford? I think he's still with his counsel.
Oh, just tell him from me that he did very well.
Would you think so? Bradford's man gave him a pretty rough time.
Yes, but he stood up to it. And the judge came down on his side. That's always a good sign. I wish Cubitt and I had done better in the box.
And you both stood up for George.
Yes, but there's this awkward fact that we've none of us been seeing him. The defense were onto it every time. Particularly with Pontefract. He didn't help. But Colonel Standish was a tower of strength. I think he may have sown a doubt in the judge's mind, if not in the jury's.
What do you think's going to happen, Mr. Cinderford?
Well, it'll all turn on what sort of show Bradford puts up in the box tomorrow.
And Grant?
Grant, too, but he doesn't matter so much. Bradford's the crux.
What about Sir Bernard Roper? What will he have to say?
Oh, nothing of consequence. He's done his damage behind the scenes.
And Mrs. Bradford?
Josie? If I were handling the defense, I wouldn't put the fair Josie in the box.
You don't think she'll say George cheated?
No, I don't think she'll say that. Everything depends on whether Jessops can trip up Bradford. We must all hold our thumbs for tomorrow.
Just one other point, Captain Bradford. Colonel Standish stated that you told him you could give chapter and verse for each case of cheating. Did you say that?
Yes.
And that you could remember the cards put down on the table on each of the three occasions when you saw Major Daviot cheat.
Yes, I believe I said that.
Perhaps you could illustrate that for us. Just tell the court what happened the first time.
Certainly. Mr. Cubitt was dealer. He dealt me a pair of knaves. Knaves of hearts and diamonds. Two small diamonds and an ace of spades. Major Daviot took one card and discarded one. I discarded my two small diamonds and was given the knave of spades and the ten of clubs. That gave me three knaves. A goodish hand.
Yes. Pray continue.
Well, I was going to back it against Daviot when I saw him pick up the card he discarded and put down another in its place.
What did you do?
Nothing. That is, I went on playing and backed my hand against his. I was determined to see him and see what he'd got in his hand.
And did you see him?
Yes.
You put your hand down with its three knaves.
Yes, when he put his down.
And what had he in his hand?
Three kings.
Thank you, Captain Bradford. I want to come back to the last hand of the evening, Captain Bradford. Do you deny that you got up from the card table when you saw your hand was useless and went to a side table to get yourself a drink?
No.
You don't deny it?
No.
You don't deny that you were absent from the table while Mr. Cinderford was giving cards?
Oh, yes, I deny that. That's quite a different thing. I only got up after the dealer had given cards and after I'd seen Major Daviot cheat. I left the table because I was disgusted by what I'd seen.
What had you seen?
I'd seen Major Daviot pick up the two cards he'd discarded and put them back in his hand.
I want you to be a little more explicit, Captain Bradford. This is a very serious matter. It is almost a matter of life and death for the man whose interests I represent. I want you to describe, carefully and in detail, exactly what you saw him do. Begin with the deal, if you please. Mr. Cinderford was the dealer. Now tell us exactly what happened.
Mr. Cinderford dealt. I looked at my hand and saw it was pretty useless, but waited to see what the others were going to do before I threw in my hand. I then saw that Major Daviot had discarded two cards. He put them down on the table beside him and asked for two new cards.
Just a minute. What about the other players?
I don't understand.
You told us you were waiting to see what the others were going to do. What did they do?
They all took cards, so I decided...
Too fast, Captain Bradford. You're going too fast. I want to make this absolutely clear. How many cards did Mr. Cubitt take?
Don't think he took any. I think he stood.
Aren't you certain?
I couldn't swear to it. I wasn't watching Mr. Covett particularly. I was watching Davitt.
I thought you said you were waiting to see what all the other players were going to do.
So I did. So I was.
You stick to that.
Yes.
But you are not certain whether Mr. Covett took cards or not.
I'm almost certain he didn't take cards.
What about Mr. Cinderford? How many cards did he take?
I'm not certain of that either. I think he took one.
What makes you think so? Don't you remember?
I remember thinking he's drawn for a flush or a straight and been disappointed.
Why did you think that?
Because he didn't back his hand afterwards. He threw it in.
What would you think, Captain Bradford, if Mr. Cinderford were to swear on oath that he had discarded three cards and taken three new cards in his hand?
I don't know. I suppose I'd have to admit I'd been mistaken.
You admit that he may have taken three cards?
I suppose so.
Then how can you remember thinking that he'd drawn one card to a flush or a straight?
I don't know.
Isn't it the truth that you remembered nothing of the kind and thought nothing of the kind, but have invented...
Rubbish.
But have invented all this to bolster up your story of how you watched the play and remembered every detail?
I don't pretend to remember everything.
You gave proof, apparently, of a very good memory just now when you were telling the court about another hand in which you say you saw Major Davitt cheat. Doesn't it seem strange that your memory should be so faulty in regard to this one?
No.
Perhaps you can remember how many cards Mr. Grant took.
He took three.
Mr. Grant wasn't certain that night, but you today, 12 months afterwards, are certain that he took three cards.
Yes.
Have you conferred with him about this since?
No.
You haven't discussed this hand with Mr. Grant since that Saturday night a year ago?
Well, of course we had to discuss it when we were faced with these proceedings.
And you very naturally went into the play of this hand very thoroughly, since it was the one hand on which your evidence and his would have to tally. But you didn't go into it quite thoroughly enough, Captain Bradford. You couldn't be quite certain, even when you got together, that you remembered the play correctly. And I put it to you that your inability to remember the details of this vital hand is due to the fact that you had not been watching the hand with any interest whatever, and that it hadn't entered your head to accuse Major Davitt of cheating until Mr. Grant shouted his accusation and spilled the cards on the floor. What do you say, Captain Bradford? Do you deny that?
I do.
You swear on your oath that you saw Major Davitt cheat during this hand?
I do.
Very well, then. Since you do swear that you saw Major Davitt cheat, please tell the court exactly what you saw him do. Begin again. I don't apologize for troubling you. This is a desperate matter. Now, what did you see?
I saw Major Davitt discard two cards and put them down on the table beside him. He then asked for two more cards, and when he'd been given them, recognizing that he'd missed a big thing and discarded the wrong card...
Just a minute. You're going too fast again, Captain Bradford. What did Major Davitt do with the two new cards the dealer gave him?
He put them with the three in his hand.
How did he hold them?
I don't understand the question.
Did he hold them in front of him so that he could see them?
Yes.
Did he hold them in both hands?
No.
In which hand did he hold these five cards? Just describe the movements of his hands. Go back again. He had discarded. He was holding three cards. In which hand? Go on, please.
He was holding three cards in his left hand. He picked up the two new cards with his right hand and put them with the three he'd kept into his left hand.
Well, he is now holding five cards in his left hand. Then what does he do?
He picks up the two cards he has already discarded with his right hand, slips them in quickly with the others, and...
Just a minute. He is now holding seven cards in his left hand. Is that right?
I suppose so.
Come, Captain Bradford, come. Did Major Davitt have all seven cards in his hand at one moment or not? If you saw him cheat and are not inventing this whole thing, you must know... Or are you inventing?
I'm inventing nothing. I'm telling you what I saw with my own eyes.
Very well.
Did you see 7 cards at a given moment in Major Daviot's left hand?
Yes.
Have you reason to believe that anyone else, in addition to Mr. Grant, saw Major Daviot cheating in the way you have described?
Yes. My wife saw him.
What about the other 2 hands in which you say Major Daviot cheated? Have you reason to believe your wife saw something on both these other occasions?
No, I couldn't say about that.
How was it that Mr. Grant noticed nothing the first time nor the second?
I don't know.
Isn't it because you have invented the whole thing?
No.
I put it to you that what you say occurred is physically impossible. I put it to you that Major Daviot could not have done what you describe, even once, without everyone at the table seeing that he was cheating. Do you swear on your solemn oath that you saw him handle the cards in this way, not only once in the last hand of the evening, but twice before?
I do.
My lord, I have brought with me into court a pack of cards. And I ask your permission to demonstrate with these cards what it is that my client has been accused of doing. If you will allow it, I propose to ask Captain Bradford to oblige us by coming down out of the witness box and sitting at that table, so that with Mr. Cinderford dealing him the cards as he dealt that fatal night, he can go through the movements he has attributed to Major Daviot for the benefit of the jury.
Any objections to this, Sir Eustace?
I see a number of objections.
What are they?
The conditions, my lord, are very different. We've no card table, no counters, no drinks either. It isn't possible to recreate the scene.
We have the cards, haven't we? One pack of cards is much the same as another, is it not?
Certainly, my lord.
Perhaps you think one pair of hands is very different from another, from the hands of a cheat, for instance. Is that what you are thinking, Sir Eustace?
I was thinking something of the sort.
But I don't remember anyone suggesting that the plaintiff had ever been accused of cheating before this. You don't propose now, do you, to suggest that Major Daviot was an habitual cheat and an expert card sharper? That isn't part of your case, is it? Because if it is, you've left it out.
No, my lord, that isn't our case.
And I don't see why Captain Bradford shouldn't demonstrate to us just what he saw Major Daviot do with those cards.
If your lordship wishes to allow this sort of melodramatic spectacle...
If melodrama comes into this sordid affair, it came in a year ago, Sir Eustace, and I think we can keep it out of this court. I think, in fact, that I myself would like to see just what did happen to those cards. And since Captain Bradford is the one person who is quite certain what did happen, he would seem to be the right person to show us. Captain Bradford, will you be so kind? Mr. Cinderford? But perhaps Captain Bradford would prefer to have his co-defendant to act as dealer. What do you say, Mr. Cinderford? Perhaps you'd better watch this time and let Mr. Grant deal the cards.
I think that's a much better plan, my lord, if Sir Quentin agrees.
Oh, certainly, much better.
Very well, then. The cards, please, Sir Quentin. Kindly give them to Mr. Grant. Sit down, Mr. Grant. Sit down, Captain Bradford. Clerks of the court won't mind standing for a few minutes. Now, Sir Quentin, this is your experiment. Please tell them what to do.
Just deal Captain Bradford 5 cards, if you please, Mr. Grant. Pick them up, please, Captain Bradford. Exactly as Major Daviot did. That's it. Now, discard 2 of them. Thank you.
Well, what's the matter? What happens next?
Give me 2 cards, will you?
And put them in your left hand with the other 3. Good. Now, we come to the moment. Show us how it's done, Captain Bradford. show us how it's done.
I don't...
I'm asking you how it's done, Captain Bradford. It means holding seven cards, doesn't it? Five in one hand and two in the other. Show us how it's done without everyone at the table seeing. Mr. Cinderford and Mr. Cabot saw nothing, remember. Come along, Captain Bradford, we're waiting.
My lord, it's not fair. I tell you, it's not fair. Conditions are entirely different. Cunningham, why do you let me in for this? You're an idiot, you hear? A damned idiot.
Silence in court. Silence in court.
My lord.
Yes, Sir Eustace.
If your lordship will give us a little time to consider.
Yes, of course. You let me know when you want me. Or perhaps, since it is now 3:30, we'd better postpone these proceedings till tomorrow morning.
I think that would be best, my lord.
Very well. Till tomorrow morning, then, and I hope by then you will have arrived at a settlement.
I shall insist upon it, my lord. I'm glad to say that damages have been agreed at £3,000. £1,000 to be paid by Mr. Grant, £2,000 by Captain Bradford.
Yes. Anything else, Sir Quinton?
I would just like to say, my lord, that my client accepts the full apology offered by the defendants and is glad that justice has been done. He hopes the court now understands the character of his action for slander and the reasons for it. The damages asked are moderate, and he tells me that the entire sum will be donated to charity. I may add that Major Daviot is a man incapable of cheating. He has conducted this case on one single principle, that the truth alone would serve him. And it has served him.
Thank you, Sir Quinton. It remains for me to say that this is the most scandalous and the most disgraceful case I have ever had anything to do with. I can only hope that it will not turn out to have been, at the same time, one of the most harmful. I am not referring to the harm done to the plaintiff. Admittedly, he has suffered a grave slander. I regard the figure of the agreed damages a reasonable one. And since the plaintiff is good enough to say that he will give the whole sum to charity, the defendants have the satisfaction of knowing that their money is not going to be gambled away at a card table. No, I refer to the harm that such men as the defendants, the plaintiff, and his friends can do publicly by the bad example of their vicious and irresponsible behavior. I award the damages as agreed with costs to the plaintiff.
That is the Pontifacts on the phone, George. We're dining with them tomorrow, and they're expecting us for Christmas.
Ah, that's the way.
Another drink, anybody?
Ah, no, not for me. I'd better be going. Oughtn't to be here at all, really. What about it, Cubbett?
Yes, you're right, Charles. Back to the house.
Yes, back to Habershot for me.
Thank you for looking in, Colonel.
Oh, that's right.
I know how much George has appreciated it.
Now, where are our coats?
Oh, Tandy's got them somewhere. Tandy, the coats?
Yes, Major.
Goodbye, then. Thank you again.
Goodbye, ma'am.
We'll see you very soon.
Many thanks.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Anything more, madam?
No, thank you, Tandy.
Give yourself a great big drink in the kitchen, Tandy.
Oh, thank you, Major. I'm very glad you pulled it off, sir. I and my friends have had quite a book on it.
Oh? What were the odds?
2-1 in your favour, sir.
Were they? And you got anything on?
A couple of months' wages, sir.
Well, don't let Mr. Justice Trotter hear about it. That's vicious and irresponsible behaviour.
I'll watch it, sir. Good night, sir. Good night, madam.
Good night, Tandy.
Tandy.
Well?
What's the matter?
What are you going to do now, Anne?
Well, I'm not going to leave you, if that's what you mean.
Anne, forgive me. I'm so terribly sorry. Oh, darling. Darling Anne.
In Action for Slander, the novel by Mary Borden, dramatized for radio by the late Felix Felton, the part of Major Daviot was played by Alan Cuthbertson, that of Sir Eustace Cunningham, K.C., by Carlton Hobbs, Sir Quinton Jessop's K.C., Dennis McCarthy, and Captain Bradford by William Fox. Other parts were played as follows. Mr. Justice Trotter, Rolf Lefevre, Mr. Grant, Anthony Vickers, Mr. William Cubitt, Hayden Jones, Mr. Charles Cinderford, John Brining, Lord Freshwater, Manning Wilson, Sir Bernard Roper, Godfrey Kenton, Lord Pontefract, Brian Haynes, Tandy, Timothy Bateson, Josie Bradford, Diana Olson, Colonel Standish, Vernon Joyner, Anne Daviot, Diana Bishop, Mr. Smithers and Benson, Peter Williams. The play was produced by David H. Godfrey.